You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to The Success Factor. This is Wes Berry, and I'm here with Ryan Toll and Aaron Berry. And we're interested in discussing some things that have gone on in the public forum during the last week or so. But we're also interested in trying to be able to maybe disagree but not be too disagreeable. That's something that's solely lacking in the public discourse that most of us see engaged on in the public forum right now. However, here at the People's Voice, you will actually see reasonable people disagreeing without being disagreeable. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Wes?
Great. And you, Aaron, you all right?
Pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. You know what? We've got a segment that we'd like to run. Congresswoman what is her name now? I had it down here. She's the congresswoman from Michigan who's from
Rashida
Tlaib.
Yeah, she's from Michigan, Rashida Tlaib. And, you know, it's important that we have a diverse Congress and that the people who are involved, you know, have the representation of, you know, society on its whole. And it's a little confusing, though, sometimes, because sometimes when you have that House of Representatives, which winds up being niched down into very small demographic areas, that sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, where their priority is leaning. Just like if you have a congressman who's from a predominantly Jewish neighborhood or area, you know, some people may have a perception that they're maybe Israeli before they're Americans. We don't feel that way. We don't believe that. And we don't believe that about this congresswoman either. But we do think she's made some naive statements or some, I don't know. Let's listen to what she has to say and you be the judge.
Education is one of the most important areas that Muslims have to address. And while our objective, our final objective, is not just to become part of the system that we experience now and that we see, our objective, our final objective, is to create our own Islamic systems, and not only create Islamic systems for Muslims, but to look at all the other people who are sharing this country with us as potential Muslims. And if we look at them as potential Muslims and feel that we have the obligation, which Allah has told us, to try to bring them into the same style of thinking, into the same way of behaving, into the same objectives that we have, then we have to have some way that we can communicate with them and some way we can work with them. And in that long-range process of making America Muslim, all of America Muslim, then we have to have some actual short-range goals. We have to have some way of dealing with them and know how we're going to deal with them and in which ways, and be very calculated about it, or else we will not accomplish our goals.
You know, that sounds a little bit as though she's not right on the right side of that. You know, it's
well, I think, Wes, all she's talking about is educating people on her belief system. And that's no different, in my opinion, than a Christian missionary going out in other countries and going around. I mean, we don't have a national religion, right? That's not part of our system. So, you know, she's just talking about educating other people in the United States. And if they happen to sway to her way of thinking, then that's great. But I don't think she's saying we're going to impose our will. She's saying we're going to educate other people about our belief system.
I don't think she's imposing her will, but I think she's I think it's, you know, one step below that, whatever that is, you know. I think she's in, you know, trying to get people to think that she wants the entire country to be Muslim.
Well, she's also, and I'm not saying that this doesn't happen, but she's also trying to get votes, right? And so if she wants to carry the Muslim vote, then I'm not saying that's why she said that, but there's a piece to that. Just, I don't believe that many candidates believe in everything they're saying.
I don't know, but I sort of think that whether a candidate believes in everything they're saying or not, it's pretty hard to argue that we shouldn't believe that they mean what they're saying. But it's a difficult thing. Now, you know, historically, if I'm sure you've read about it as I have, that, you know, when John Kennedy was running for president, people were afraid that he would be kowtowing or
to the Catholic Church,
to the Pope, that he would owe his allegiance to the Pope and not to the Constitution. I will say this. She needs to not say these sort of things, because either if they are true, she should be smarter than to tell people. And if they're not true and she's saying them, she's going to create more animosity, not just towards herself. Unfortunately, it's going to be aimed at the Muslim community at large. And that is a real pity. And perhaps, I don't know, it just doesn't seem as though she's properly equipped to be in the office that she's in.
So I'm not saying that statement would be considered politically the smart thing to do. I don't want to say politically correct. I mean, in a different way. I mean, specifically for her political career, the right thing to do. But I think at the end of the day, she's being honest. And aren't we critical that we want our politicians to be honest? She's being honest, and she got elected.
Well, I think to quote her as best as I can is that, you know, the goal in there was to make all Americans Muslim, to have this be a Muslim country. Now, look, I suppose that one could make an intellectual argument about what that means. But there's a saying that people say who are racist or what do you call it when they're afraid of everything?
Xenophobic.
That's the word, xenophobic, I guess. Anyhow, I don't want to say this, but it makes you wonder if they really want this country to be like that country. Why are they here and why aren't they there? You know, if you're saying that you want to make this country a Muslim country like the country that you are from, then why did you come here in the first place? And I know that's a bad way to say it, but it begs the question when you hear that sort of a presentation by someone.
Well, we all came here at some point. So maybe it was a generation ago. Maybe it was 10 generations ago. We all came here, aside from Native Americans, who, well, that's a whole separate topic for an episode. But, you know, I think everybody believes, hey, my belief system is the best. I want everyone to believe what I believe. I mean, there's Jehovah's Witnesses go door to door to make other people.
It seems to me that the people who fled Nazi Germany and came here didn't want this to be like that. And I think that most people that come to this country come for a reason, that they feel that being here will be better than being where they were.
Well, I think
if they want to make this like where they were, what the heck is going on?
But I would tell you that, you know, fleeing Nazi Germany is sort of unfair, right? Because at that time, especially if you were Jewish, that you were fleeing for a very specific reason. But
well, when you were still allowed to flee,
right?
Not so much,
right?
Okay, so I know what you're saying, and I don't want to say that business about if you want this to be, you know, I don't like that argument. And she's putting that argument on the table for other people, and she shouldn't be doing that.
Well, but I don't know that that's – maybe she believes that there is an opportunity here to do what she thinks is better. And I would go back to missionaries or Jehovah's Witnesses. And hey, look, I'm just as guilty of hiding when Jehovah's Witness comes to my door as anybody, right? I'm not claiming that I'm open to all things. And frankly, I wouldn't be real interested in having a conversation about converting to being Muslim on my front porch. But I think the reality of it is that she's simply stating what she thinks, what she believes is correct, as we all think, you know, theology-wise, what we think is correct. And so she just wants to open other people's eyes to that belief system.
Look, I'm not a politician, but if I was a politician, I would not be out there saying that part of my goal was to convert people to a particular religion. It's incongruent with the holding of an office because when you want to convert someone to your religion instead of respecting that they may have motivations to their religion, then you're not in a position to be able to support religious freedom. And when your interpretation of what needs to be done is that everybody needs to be this religion or that religion instead of whatever religion they're comfortable with, and you espouse that publicly, it's either she's completely nuts or she's not fit to be in that position.
Well, I think though that's not really a fair statement, Wes, because I think there's plenty of candidates and I'm going to guess, predominantly Republican candidates, but that they would prefer to convert everybody in the United States to Christianity in some way.
And if anybody stood up and said that, I would be saying the exact same thing about it, because if somebody wants to stand up and say that they want to convert everybody to one religion or another, I would not be happy to hear that. I would not be tolerant of that conversation.
I think that's kind of a veiled piece of the Make America Great Again slogan, right? That make America all have the same belief system again. Make it the 1950s. Make everyone I think it's part of that. And maybe it's not as direct. So maybe she's less sinister.
Well, we can disagree on this. And hopefully,
well, we're probably not going to agree anytime soon.
And hopefully not be disagreeable about it.
And I think at the core, though, Wes, that what we both do agree about is that everybody should have religious freedom in the United States.
Absolutely. And it shouldn't make any difference whether or not – look, I have friends, same friends that you have. I have friends who are Muslim. I have friends who are Jewish. And they're not just people I know or met once.
Right,
they're friends
right.
of mine.
Sure.
And you know what? It's just as important to me that they be able to practice their religion as they see fit.
I agree.
And for me to be able to practice mine, and you don't, I'm not the guy going on knocking on other people's doors trying to convert them. But what I would prefer someone who wants to do that be about is knocking on doors to see if anybody needs support.
I would agree with that.
And if they need help and share their way of thinking about it. I mean, I don't have a problem with that, but I don't like this. We want to convert everybody to be this.
I agree with you. I don't agree. You know, I don't think that's smart, but I don't think she's – I don't think it's sinister. I think she's just revealing her motive. I would go to the next step to say, you know, just as we're talking about this, you know, churches don't pay taxes, Wes. So have you ever thought about starting – some type of
– you know, it's a good idea, but who says that I pay taxes anyways, all right? We're going, and on that note, we're going to go to a break. We're being sponsored today by Liberty Tax Observers. No, we're not.
so excited.
No, we're going to go to a quick break here, and when we get back, we'll be on to another subject.
Because of Shriners Hospitals for Children, I can play basketball. I could climb stairs.
I can write my name.
At Shriners Hospitals for Children, love is caring for a child, regardless of the family's ability to pay. If you know a child we can help, visit ShrinersHospitalsForChildren.org.
This is Brad Paisley. How does a good boy become a good man? DeMolay believes that it takes good friends, good activities, and good role models. DeMolay is the only nonprofit youth organization where young men decide on the activities, plan them, and carry them out. But it takes adult volunteers to be the role models that steer them in the right direction. A celebrity isn't necessarily a role model. A role model is a caring, concerned adult like you. To learn more, call 1-800-DEMOLAY or visit them on the web at DeMolay.org.
I don't have a pedigree. I wasn't the result of careful breeding, so you won't see me at a pet store. But I do love belly rubs and long walks. I can learn tricks if you'll teach me. I may not be a showstopper, but I'd love to be a heartstopper. And I'd love a family if I had one. Come meet me at your local Humane Society. Visit humanesociety.org to learn more.
Welcome back. This is the People's Voice, and I'm very glad that you're still with us. There's always seems to be things in the news that can generate controversy. Currently, there's a lot of military assets being moved to the Middle East by the Trump administration in response, presumably, to some threat or some concern or whatever you want to call it. However, at the same time, Iran is making noise like that we don't want your ships over here and that we have the ability and the capability and maybe even the willingness to use our weapons that are medium to short range ballistic missiles that could knock out your ships. And there was a whole fleet of bombers that was moved over into the Middle East as well. And the question – it begs the question, are we there as a prevention or are we there trying to pick a fight? And you know, it's a legitimate question, and it from both sides, it's a legitimate question. Well, what are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
You know, I think it's a hard statement to make, right? My go-to would be that the current administration tends to operate more in what I'm going to call the New York mentality, which is sort of a bullying mentality, right? So if you're not doing what we want, we're gonna kind of force you to do it.
And by the way, to all you New Yorkers out there, I'm not the one saying that.
Not this time.
And I know better than to say that too often. I spent a lot of time in New Jersey, and I know that between Philly and New York, there's an awful lot of wonderful people.
I'm a big fan of New Jersey, other than the smell of New Jersey. But no, it's a joke. But no, really. You know, I think that there's a little bit of that bullying tendency, right?
Right.
And I have a little fear to your earlier point. What do we do if someone attacks us? That's an act of war, right? So do we then go to war with Iran? Are we prepared to do that? Are we prepared to start another front?
I'll tell you, the worst possible thing that Iran could do for itself is to pick at that scab right now.
I agree with you.
If they – you know, not that long ago, President Trump said something along the lines that you don't want to get in a fight with us, Iran, because if you do, you're not going to be around anymore. And their response was, we've been around for thousands of years and we'll still be around no matter what you decide to do, which isn't really a very amenable way to resolve anything.
No, it doesn't.
Either remark. However, if they sink or destroy or even severely damage any one of our naval vessels that are there, I do not think that you could stop a response.
I would agree. Well, I think even if you fire on them, I don't even need to severely damage them. I think you fire on us, that's an act of war. You know, but if I'm assuming it's a Nimitz-class carrier. I can't remember what we've sent over. But, you know, there's 6,000 people on there too. It's not like we don't have – that's a lot of folks.
And I'm sure that someone is saying not only is it 6,000 people, but it's X number of billions of dollars worth of hardware.
Yeah, right.
And whether it's an aircraft carrier or whether it's a frigate or an escort destroyer, I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference. If they actually – if they're going to have a hard time stopping the momentum that would start.
I would agree.
I would be shocked if – I would really be shocked if we didn't use every – means available. And when I say every means, I'm not saying I think we should. I'm saying I think that we would.
And I would go one step farther that we've, you know, there's in a Clint Eastwood movie, right, that, you know, that we've had trouble winning wars since World War II, right, that Korea was basically a draw, Vietnam was a loss, so forth. But that's because we weren't really at war with a government, right? We were at war with things within those states. And so Iran, if they create an act of war and we have someone to go to war against, I think that's a whole different, you know, even a war with Iraq, right? Saddam Hussein technically, you know, was running that country, but in reality, he had taken it by force, right? And so we were fighting his regime, but maybe not the country, not a duly elected government, so to speak.
And that's how you always want to position those things. We're not fighting the people.
Right.
We're not fighting the people of Iraq. We're fighting the government of Iraq. We're not fighting that's just dancing around the issue. The issue is that if something actually occurred there, lots and lots of people would die. Lots of innocent lives would be lost.
Absolutely.
Lots of American lives as well. Even, you know, right now.
Do they have a lot of oil?
I'm sorry?
Do they have a lot of oil? Does Iran have a lot of oil?
Well, they have quite a bit, and they're also in the position of having quite a bit of oil.
It's weird that it's always wars where there's oil. Oh, sorry.
It is interesting, isn't it? Mm. You know? But it's not always oil. Sometimes there are other things, just not recently.
Gold. Yeah, diamonds.
Yeah. You know, listen, I'll be the first to admit that except for, the Helen of Troy deal, I think every major conflict by nations has always been involved in some sort of monetary consideration. And one could make the argument that Helen was a very valuable item as well.
I saw the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Well, I definitely liked your reference to Clint Eastwood earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was about the invasion of Grenada.
Yes.
And I've been to Grenada. It's a nice place. Went up on the hill where all the stuff went on and everything, you know, the whole thing.
Like you were there post, you know, the 1980s or
post.
Okay.
Post. But it was a very cool place. Not that.
I don't actually know where Grenada is. Does it border Venezuela? I don't know where it is geographically.
It's a Caribbean island. Oh. It's a pretty good sized Caribbean island. And, you know, we went on a cruise. That was one of the places we went. We spent the day there at least. And it was a good time. Was Grenada where they were where a tourist got murdered around the corner?
No, I think that was Barbados.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Barbados isn't a really safe place. I don't. Get too far off track, but you know, we've talked before. I used to work for Sears and Kmart, and so the most busy super Kmart in the world was in Guam, but the manager, because he's one of the highest paid people in Guam, had a full time security force as the manager of the Kmart store.
Well, you know, it all depends. You know, big fish, small pond.
Right.
Small fish,
right.
Big. Yeah, it's a very serious issue. I don't know about what will happen any more than anyone else does. But I do know what the response would be if American assets were attacked in the Middle East. And I really don't think that there's – maybe you can disagree with whether or not he should or shouldn't or anything like that. But I don't think that Donald Trump is someone who is going to just say, oh, you know what? Next time you do that, there's going to be a problem.
Right, no, he certainly is not. He certainly is a – a guy that, you know, is of the belief that if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back harder, right? That's his – or at least try to. But the argument could be made that you're posturing to get hit when you send an asset like an aircraft carrier there.
And the point is that, you know, the reason why guys are like that, at least in my experience, someone in his position, he doesn't want you to test him a second time. If you're going to take a punch at me, I'm going to take a couple punches at you, and that way I don't have to worry about getting punched by you again. So it becomes a self cascading event.
What I fear though, and this is a true like actual personal fear, is we as a country have been very insulated, 9/11 aside, from attacks on our soil, and I feel like when you overly posture with some of these folks, with dictators and with countries that are, you know, North Korea is a great example too, but that if you do hit them, that they're going to hit back in a different way. And we really are not prepared as a country to deal with that type of scenario.
Well, we are going to need to go to a break in a second. But, you know, the problem is that I believe that the current administration understands that, and their solution to that is to hit them so hard that you knock them into a different century.
And to close the borders, that helps.
Well,
right?
You know, I don't believe he's going to screw around with it. I really don't.
Well, I don't believe he is either. I'm just not sure I'm going to agree with what he does.
Well, I don't know that I am either. But, you know, it was important to open the discussion so that people could understand where he was thinking when he actually was discussing early in his administration the use of nuclear weapons, and he was told, well, we can't do that, and he said, why not? And I realize that nobody wants nuclear weapons used, but it's been a long time since they have been used, and the last time they were used, they sort of solved a really big problem really quickly.
But they were used against a country that couldn't defend, that didn't have their own nuclear weapons, and that creates a different scenario.
I understand. And if they had nuclear weapons, Donald Trump's mentality would be make sure that we get all of them. His response is going to be let's turn that country into glass. But we got to go to a break, and then we're going to come back and wrap up this segment of The People's Voice and move into the success factor. So let's hear what we've got on the table here.
Optimus volunteers contribute time and money to programs that inspire and bring out the best in kids. Optimus give leadership, guidance, and hands-on involvement to activities that shape young people's lives. Optimus help form positive attitudes in kids, and Optimus create opportunities for youth as they develop into adulthood and become role models for future generations. optimists are doing all these things right here, right now.
For the Optimist Club, this is spot number one, Radio 30 Seconds.
What's a kid's future worth to you? Could you find an hour or two to help a kid grow up positively? That's all it takes when you're an optimist. We're role models, mentors, leaders, and friends to kids who want to do well. You can lend them a helping hand by volunteering your time for activities and programs that make a positive difference in the lives of young people. If you care about kids, the time to act is here and now. Become an optimist and bring out the best in kids.
Masons Among Us, brought to you by Michigan Masons.
Listed at 7'1" and weighing 325 pounds, he was one of the heaviest players ever to play in the NBA. He won four NBA championships and numerous MVP awards in his 19-year career and is currently a basketball TV analyst. His name, Shaquille Shaq O'Neal, a proud member of the Masonic fraternity.
Brotherhood, fellowship, community. Be a Mason. Go to wearethemasons.org to find out more.
Two or three. Welcome back to the People's Voice. And we've been talking about a couple different things today. The last issue that we've been trying to talk through has to do with whether or not our posturing in the Middle East currently is really an invitation to trouble rather than a deterrent. And it's a difficult question. You know, it's a very difficult question. It's hard to see. It's very hard to see. I think that anybody who decides that they want to test this administration will be making a mistake. And I don't know that that's always been true. You know, even during Ronald Reagan's administration, the bombing of the barracks in Beirut, you know, a few months later, we withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to imagine that you wouldn't view the Reagan administration as being hawkish. I think if something like that happened in this administration, there would be a much more aggressive response. And these threats about attacking our naval forces in the Mediterranean in the Suez area over there, it seems to me that I don't think that we're going to put up with that stuff.
I don't disagree. The question becomes, much like managing people in a workplace, right? That you have to have a certain amount of tolerance for people having ideas that are different than yours, right? And for not doing things exactly the way that you would do them. And the question becomes, is he attempting to manage people in that style, or is he attempting to manage completely through intimidation? And that's the worry, right? Is that
– well, in this world outside – you know, when you're talking about dealing with tin horn dictators around the world – I don't know that a developmental model is the best way to go. I think it's more the attrition model, where you make them go away if things don't go the way that you want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you can approach things as if you're a college professor reasoning with these sort of regimes. And I would be shocked if there wasn't a very radical – and, you know, he's got to – it's sort of like this. If something goes on over there and he doesn't just beat the living tar out of them so that they never breathe again, he's going to have trouble all over the world. You know, we've got to go to our second segment. I just want to say one thing. You know, this is going way back in time, and I know I was not present, but nonetheless, when Rome and Carthage were – battling each other for supremacy in the Mediterranean. After the first couple times of beating back the Carthaginians and then having them spring back up, Rome salted the ground, salted the earth
right.
of Carthage so that never anything that could threaten Rome could grow there again. This is a lesson that isn't taught in today's world, but I believe that it would have been taught in the world that Donald Trump grew up in. And I am confident that it's something that he was told when he was in the New York Military Academy. And he also probably had a sign over a door that he had to walk through every day that said something like, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Yeah.
If you want war, prepare for peace. This guy is not going to lay down.
No, I agree with you. And the worry though is, are we a country that as a whole can back that type of attitude? Do we have the appetite for that?
And that's why it will be even more radical than you can imagine, because he'll want it to be over with quickly and irrevocably.
Hey, side note, that whole prepare for war, Parabellum, John Wick 3, Parabellum, have you seen that yet? Excellent movie.
I have not, but you know, Parabellum is actually the name of what we think of as the German Luger.
Yes, yep.
And that's the same thing. That, by the way, this Parabellum thing is like Latin for this prepare for peace.
Luger, when the P-8 was invented, and the 9mm Luger, after World War II, we didn't want to continue to call it Luger, and it was adopted. The 9mm caliber was adopted along with 45, but 9mm cost what we'd now call NATO. And so the 9mm was adopted to prepare for war. Parabellum.
Right. But that did not happen until the 80s, actually, when we adopted the 9mm.
But the rest of NATO had adopted it much earlier.
I said we did not.
Yeah, we stuck with the 45. We're very progressive.
We like that gun. We'd only had it since 1919.
Yeah, 1911. 1911,
I'm sorry. 1911, yeah. We're going to have to wrap things up and move to our next segment, which is the success factor. And in the success factor, we'd like to talk to you right now about some good things that are going on and some things that have been successful in families, business, or society in general. And one of the things that I'd like to talk about is kind of difficult to appreciate. You know, one of the things that I believe drives success in this country more than anything else is the friction that exists between the branches of government. You know, if you want to have a successful country, you don't want to have a real strong and effective government. You want to have a government who can't get things done unless it's overwhelmingly the thing to do.
And I don't know where to go with this, Wes.
You don't know where I'm going?
I don't.
Okay. Well, Justice Scalia before he passed away, had delivered a speech to Congress that he entitled American Exceptionalism. And in that, he talked about how the framers really wanted to make sure that when you talk about separation of powers, you're not just talking about two that will agree. He went in to talk to discuss about how every country in the world has a Bill of Rights just like we do. You know, the biggest dictator in the world has a Bill of Rights. He actually said that the equivalent of the Bill of Rights in the former Soviet Union's constitution was better than ours. But it had nothing to do with reality, because a constitution isn't just a piece of paper. When you think about the constitution of an individual, you're thinking about how they actually interact, how they actually think about things, how they actually do things. And a healthy constitution in our case is one that if some minority group is going to be oppressed by some legislation, they can cause enough fuss to get it prevented.
Okay.
And he talked about how it's really that you want to avoid a dictatorship of a majority.
I agree with that.
Which is a difficult thing for people to grasp sometimes, and is really why, you know, that we do have a republic instead of a democracy.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't get that either. But in a republic, it's really difficult to get little things done. And he was talking about how he was speaking with judicial branches from other countries, and they have symposiums, and you know, it's an excuse to go party probably. But at any rate, how they would ask about how things worked here, and he would explain, you know, how we had two parties and this and that, and the response would be, "Wait, how can you get anything done? That would be terrible. There's no way we could operate that way. Nothing would get done." And he said, "Exactly. We don't want a lot to get done. We just want a very well liberated society that allows itself to progress without additional encumbrance."
So in a rare – I'm going to agree with you. I have to go back a little bit in your statement, because so earlier you said that basically a well-run country would not be prosperous, right? Am I paraphrasing you
I didn't say prosperous, but you don't want to live in a well-run country because if you live in a well-run country and you're not on the run that's running it, you're not going to be happy.
So now I understand why you voted for Trump. Now I get it. Yeah, so I appreciate right. that.
You know, we're in the success factor right
oh,
now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Which, I forgot
which,
we were in
– which is really not
– I digress.
The, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right. I apologize.
So, you know, it's a hard thing to understand. And Justice Scalia went on to talk about how if you really want to enjoy the liberties that this country really offers, you have to learn to embrace the gridlock. Now, this is a very hard thing for people that
– Very difficult.
It's very difficult because let's say that, well, you have an agenda
sure.
that is different than mine for the sure. most part. You really don't want me to have – the things that I'd like changed in our government done overnight, and I don't want the things that you want done overnight. So guess what? We can both be dissatisfied, which is the best way to get along.
Well, so I don't disagree with any state party. I mean it's sort of like – so I took a negotiation class years ago, right? And they said that for negotiation to be successful, both parties need to leave a little unhappy and a little satisfied.
Yeah.
Because if one leaves real happy and one's unhappy, that was not a good situation. And if you're both happy, then you don't really understand what happened.
That is very true. And it's actually in chapter 2 of my book.
Interesting.
Big Things Have Small Beginnings, where I go into this in detail. And it's one of those things that is – it sounds irrational at first. But then once you dig into it a little bit deeper and you start thinking about it, you know, but let's look at the Obama administration. There were lots of things that went on in the Obama administration that a large portion of the country really appreciated. After 8 years, a lot of them went away. And the other part of the country who felt disenfranchised all of a sudden felt that they were re-enfranchised. So you have this revolution without a gunshot. You could not have that drastic of a movement in most countries in terms of how their government administers things or how they work on things without having gunshots. And that's the beauty of it is the consternation that it creates. It's a very strange thing.
Well, I'm choosing words carefully, but you know, that's not really the way it maybe is explained to you in your government class in high school, right? Checks and balances are but I think what you're saying is factual. I don't disagree with any one point. And I think if anybody was a believer in one system or the other and that system continually lost or continually won, because some people really enjoy being the underdog, right? Let's be honest. There's people that want to fight for everything they do. They don't want it just to be their way, and that's just human nature. I want to disagree with you, but I can't on any particular point there.
Our pendulum swings left and then it swings right.
Forever, I think.
It's not that way in the Soviet Union, right? Oh, and it's not that way in its successor now, the Russia, right?
Right.
It's clear that, look, they elect the same guy over and over again. And when he's no longer able to hold that highest office in the land, Vladimir Putin, because they had term limits, then he runs for the second highest office in the land and they transfer the authority from one
sure.
office to
sure.
the other. And, you know, I mean, come on. This is absurd, right? Well, this is a very efficient – the most efficient government you can have is an authoritarian government.
So
if you want things to – if you want the trains to run on time, if you want the everything to be lockstep, you've got to submit. And that's not what this country's about.
I agree. So I was with a business associate this week who is from Canada, and she indicated to me that – and we've talked about this before on the show, Wes. Canadians are tremendously interested in American politics. And we were driving to it and I said, why is that? She said, well, basically Canadian politics are boring. Right? We're an incredibly liberal country and things just continue along that path and very little happens to derail that path.
You know, not a lot of people realize that our great northern neighbors are limited in some ways that we are not.
Mm-hmm.
For example, all of this investigating that's going on in our government right now if it was – if we were under the same rules of governance that the Canadian government is, you would hear very, very, very little, if anything, about it. You'd never hear a name of someone individually.
Oh, yeah, right. They can't name anybody until they're convicted. Is that the
– you know what? I had someone who in another lifetime, we were running a very aggressive business, and we had somebody who was really coming after us with a lot of very negative publicity that wasn't necessarily based in reality and accusations that were, you know, of a very sophisticated nature. And he was – his mailing address though was in Canada. So guess what? He had to stop because he's not allowed to make those accusations without them being proven out.
Yeah, adjudicated,
so,
right.
So let's say that God forbid some innocent child is harmed in some horrific way by a man who gets arrested for that crime. They can't mention his name until he gets convicted. Now, I don't know whether or not I agree with that or not, because sometimes I think it turns into a circus, and then what happens if the guy's innocent? You know, like Donald Trump is innocent.
But innocent's a really difficult word to use, right? But I
well, the legal system doesn't find people innocent.
No, it finds them not guilty. Right, guilty or not guilty. But you know, I think I would say that – now maybe this is a great subject as you write your next book, but I would say there have probably been more people whose lives were destroyed by allegations even that were proven false later.
Oh, absolutely.
Then – I mean, especially allegations around, you know, children and those types of things, right? And all sorts of, you know, sexual harassment, things like that, right? I think there's a lot of people that have lost their job or had their career derailed. And maybe they hadn't done it. Now, maybe they had, and so the question becomes: is it safer just to protect everyone that way? I don't know, but
I don't know the right answer to that either. But I do know when I think about and for some reason I don't seem to have a lot of recent information to draw on, but I have information from when I was younger to draw on, and that is, you know, what happened to the captain of the Indianapolis after that ship was sunk. He wound up committing suicide over it, and he didn't really do anything wrong.
And that was
because so much anger was generated about the situation that people lost track. It was like mob mentality. So, now, I'm not saying that we need to change to that. What I am trying to say is that this country is very, very, very unique.
Yes.
Even in the two party system that we have, you know, in Venezuela they lock up. I think the number two guy in the opposition got shot. No, he got arrested a few weeks ago. They couldn't get him out of his car. The current government in Venezuela couldn't get him out of his car to arrest him, so they hooked up the car to a tow truck and towed the car to prison.
I heard that.
Can you imagine if – now who was Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate?
I don't even know.
What the hell?
Anybody know
his name? Anyways.
I'm going to Google that.
Well,
hold on.
Whatever his name was, can you imagine if Donald Trump – had him arrested and he wouldn't get out of his car. So we towed him – not we, they – towed him to prison. This would be big, big news, but not so much in some other countries. When I was writing the book that's out right now, Big Things Have Small Beginnings, I was talking about how ambition can run amok.
And Tim Kaine. Even in reading that, I don't remember that. And I voted for
– well, you know – if I had voted for that ticket, I would probably forget all about it too. If you know, I understand, you know, people try to block out things that are – but really when you think about what goes on in these other countries, I was explaining how ambition run amok can actually lead to assassinations of other people and even people ahead of you in line, so to speak. And my editor came back and said, you know, that's ridiculous. You can't say something like that. That doesn't happen anymore. And I thought, you know, obviously you're not open to what happens outside of this country. And it does happen. My kids were when they were in school, I got such a kick out of this. My sons were doing some sort of report or I don't know what it was about. But the conversation came up in school about pirates. And the teacher said that pirates don't exist anymore. And my kids said, well, but they do. And they got in an argument.
There's Somali pirates everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all that means is committing a crime on the high seas. Right, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's an act of piracy if you steal someone's lobster trap.
But there's only like three international laws, right? Piracy, software piracy. And slavery are illegal. You know, those are the international laws. So, I mean, there's obviously a call to have those laws.
Well, genocide is in there too.
Yeah. It probably is, but it didn't support my point. So, I'm just leaving it out.
I understand. But, you know, you would think that the left would, you know, throw genocide out there first, you know. But at any rate, the important thing to understand is that things are not as bad here as we think they are.
I agree with that 100%.
And the fact that we're allowed to think they are bad and that we are allowed to voice that they are bad and that we don't get our turn this week but we will get a turn next week is remarkable in this country.
What?
We're going to go to a break here, and then when we get back, we're going to throw this open to my good friend Ryan on what he thinks success is really about.
Oh, that's fair.
This is Brad Paisley. How does a good boy become a good man? DeMolay believes that it takes good friends, good activities, and good role models. DeMolay is the only nonprofit youth organization where young men decide on the activities, plan them, and carry them out. But it takes adult volunteers to be the role models that steer them in the right direction. A celebrity isn't necessarily a role model. A role model is a caring, concerned adult like you. To learn more, call 1-800-DEMOLAY or visit them on the web at demolay.org.
My friend Brandon Gallagher.
When I first started playing hockey, people always told me I was too small, but I never let that stop me.
They say that about me too. But here at the Shriners Hospital for Children, kids like me with orthopedic conditions get the best care.
That's right. This is a place of hope, where kids learn that they can achieve their dreams.
To learn more and support Shriners Hospital for Children, call or go online today.
Mason's Among Us, brought to you by Michigan Masons.
Nickname Woz. He is an inventor, programmer, and technology entrepreneur who co-founded Apple. He is known as pioneer of the personal computer revolution of the 1970s and 80s, and he single-handedly developed the Apple I. His name, Steve Wozniak, a proud member of the Masonic fraternity.
Brotherhood, fellowship, community. Be a Mason. Go to wearethemasons.org to find out more.
Welcome back to the Success Factor, and we're here with Aaron Berry, myself Wesley Berry, and also Ryan Toll.
Hey,
and since we're talking about success, everybody seems to interpret or define success differently. And Ryan, I was wondering if you could tell me what you think success is, and I'm going to ask you, Aaron, too.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of different ways to interpret success, but let's correlate success and happiness, right? And say that having a healthy family, you know, you feel successful that you have healthy children who are happy with their lives and doing what they want to do. I think there's a financial measure to success, right? You don't have to be wealthy, but I also think it helps not to worry about where your next meal is coming from or if you can make that mortgage payment.
Right.
I think success is also being at a point in your life where you are able to comfortably, you know, speak about what you believe in and be confident in those views, you know. But I would say, you know, I mean, obviously when we talked a little bit in the air, but off the air, but yeah, obviously, you know, families, you know, everyone I know that, you know, people that don't have a family, I sort of feel a little sad for them, you know.
I understand what you mean. Now, you know, for me, success is not that difficult to quantify. By the way, it's not always happiness for me. I don't mind a little bit of confrontation, a little bit of
That's fair.
I'm going to tell your wife that. Remind her. I think she knows.
Yeah.
if every time I went fishing, they jumped in the boat, I would not enjoy that.
You know, that's a good point.
So for me, although I would probably be happy.
Yeah, right.
But I enjoy the hunt a little bit on those things. And for me, I think definitely family is right up there, number one, and certainly, you know, what I in any ways value most. And second, probably having a dog. But, you know,
yeah, well, sure.
But I'm a dog guy, you know. So, and the dog, you know, people don't understand the difference between, you know, they think that people are better than dogs. I don't know that I agree with that. Let's take this situation, for example. If I take and I lock my wife in the trunk of the car and I come back and I let her out in an hour, she's going to be pissed at me. But if I lock the dog in the trunk, I come back in an hour, I open it up, he's going to be happy as hell. He's so happy to see me. It's unbelievable. So I don't know. It's confusing, and lots of people have different ways of looking at happiness. You know, financial is an important way to keep track of things. It's sort of like a scorecard.
Sure.
But they say you want to die poor. They say you want to spend everything before you go, which I can understand.
Aaron looks really worried when you said that. Yeah, there's a lot of concern across his face.
I understand. Aaron, what do you think success is?
I mean, I think that everyone's got their own definition, and I think that there's, you know, probably some kind of universal definition out there as to, you know, what success means. And I mean, I think definitely, you know, a family, having a good, healthy family that you're able to communicate with, you know, regularly, mm-hmm. and, you know, just in a positive manner is definitely, you know, a level of success. But, you know, I mean, obviously financials, you know, everyone's going to say financial is part of, you know, a measure of success.
And you're not necessarily happy because you have a lot of money, but it's still success.
I don't think – and I think another thing too is like I don't know if success necessarily – equates to happiness either.
You know? No, I think there's a lot of financially successful people that aren't super happy. I think you're 100% correct there.
Two separate terms and two separate, you know.
I will tell you from personal life. So I'm 44 years old, and I just was telling somebody this the other day. So let's say 14 years ago, if I had been offered a job that I would have got a $20,000 or $30,000 pay raise, I would have taken that 100% of the time no matter what. Today – recruiters, you know, I have a diverse background, so recruiters in my industry will contact me, and I don't want to talk to them, right? Because I like what I'm doing. I have certain freedoms in my life, right? I have a great boss. You know, I have the chance. You know, if I call him and say, hey, you know, it's 2:00, I'm taking off tonight, I'm going up north. He goes, great. Why are you calling me? You know what I mean? Like, and I learned from switching companies in the past that A, there's a reason somebody pays you 30 or 40 or 50 grand more, right? Because they want more out of you, and there's just a certain, you know, quality of life that comes with working for the right place. And so that's – as you talk about success, right, do you think you're successful in your career? There's more that weighs into that, just finance for sure.
And, you know, if you ask somebody often and if they're being candid, if they're not, you know, thinking about giving the right answer, they're going to say, well, you know, if I could be have $1 million, I would be success. That would be success. They may get the $1 million, and that may qualify as success, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're fulfilled by that. And so it's difficult sometimes to understand that, especially, sure, you know, when you're in the thick of the fray, so to speak. And sometimes, you know, you may think that you've succeeded in something, but sometimes you get things you don't really want.
Sure. No, I think that's a really, and I think because success is so subjective, right, that there's, you know, you'll hear of, so maybe somebody died and they died nearly penniless, but they lived their life doing everything they ever wanted to do, took all the trips they ever wanted, had the vacation homes, had the whatever cars, and so, but they didn't die with anything. And then the flip side, there's people that were auto mechanics but died and left hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars to their family because they never spent anything. And so which had a more successful life? That's very objective.
Now, this is a liberal interpretation of success. And I can see straight through that. You know, all he wants to do is get along, be happy, and enjoy life, and isn't interested in being able to pay for it necessarily.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah. Not really. I think that it's a hard thing to define, but I really, if more people would try to define success for themselves,
I agree,
early on, they would have a greater opportunity to attain it. And lots of times, you know, people are chasing the wrong thing.
Sure.
And they don't know it. They don't know it sometimes until the clock has started to run out for mm-hmm. them, or they don't know it until other factors intercede and the momentum starts over. You know, you may say, oh, you know, I would feel successful if I owned this.
Mm-hmm.
But then every month you have to make the payment on that. And this becomes the what you're living for is to pay for that.
Right. And I think I've been successful. I've enjoyed my life because I've set goals for myself. And when you reach those goals, you're like, but I can remember, you know, years ago when I was working in a store or whatever, going, hey, if I can just get to making $1,000 a week, I'll be happy, right? And then I got to that and I went, well, if I can just get, you know, to $2,000 a week, and then I got
Is that when they changed the currency so the copier didn't work anymore?
Right, yeah, right. And that was weird. They put that little strip in there and then I was done.
Huh?
No, but I mean, it's just, think about, you know, in other countries like, you know, Mexico famously, they just took two zeros off their currency, right? So they wouldn't be a third world country. So if you had 10,000 pesos, it was now worth 1,000 pesos or
– So we're almost 100. On a par with them now.
Yeah. So we –
I wasn't even aware of that. Did Canada do that too?
I would never talk about our friends to the north.
That's true. Well, you know, whenever I hear anything about Canada, I always think of 54-40 or fight. Which was the battle cry of Zachary Taylor, who wanted to annex that portion of Canada that would have moved it to the 54th parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if we had actually done that, there wouldn't be anything left because everything in Canada is like within 3 or 4 miles of our border, right?
Yeah,
there's nothing else.
Well, Toronto, I think, is like
I don't know, but I think it's pretty close.
I don't know that you're wrong.
Well, I love our Canadian allies. And I'm glad that that we enjoy the largest non-militarized border in the world.
You know, they can speaking of military, you know, they can transfer branches of military there.
You can here too.
Well, it's a lot more difficult here. You have to like leave one and join the other. They can just transfer.
I actually think you can transfer here too. But, you know, I may be wrong. It may be a little encumbering, but it can happen.
You have your hat in your back window that indicates the branch of military to which you –
Well, here's the deal. The deal is that I have some personal insight into changing sides. I'll explain that next week. But I am very well familiar with that. And by the way, it can be part of a success strategy. You know, it worked out real for a friend of mine named Benedict. We'll go into that.
But there's a lot of famous politicians who – Ronald Reagan was a Democrat, right?
Absolutely.
And then he switched sides
Absolutely.
And became president as a Republican. So
Yeah. I think he had a line that went along with that. I used to be a Democrat, and then I woke up one day and had an epiphany that. But I don't remember how it goes exactly. But you know, Ron always had a lot of good one-liners.
I don't dislike Reagan. I think he was an interesting guy, and I think he's a tough dude. Right? He got shot, but he insisted on walking into the hospital on his own because he didn't want the country to see that he was injured.
Yep.
I have a lot of respect for that.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Another very president that I like an awful lot is Teddy Roosevelt, who was actually shot before he went in to give a speech.
Huh? I thought you were going to say Nixon.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I've never really understood what he did wrong. But with Ron
– You can Google that. It comes right up.
Yeah, all he said was – I think we could get $1 million if we needed it. You know, he didn't actually do anything. He just talked about it. But anyhow, we'll be back next week. Thank you for joining us. And this has been The Success Factor. Have a great week.
What is Rotary? We're international.